Welcome into the BBP. This is the Bengals Beat Podcast presented by Inquirer Sports. Here, your Cincinnati.com Bengals beat writers, Paul Diener Jr. and Jim Ossarski, invite you beyond the headlines and inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Find out the insider news as well as listening on conversations with players, coaches, and others relevant to the club. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Just search Inquirer Bengals Beat Podcast. And as always, you can listen on our free Cincinnati Inquirer Bengals app. If you don't have the app, well, I suggest rectifying that situation immediately in the App Store. Now, if you're down with BBP, let's go. Welcome in to the latest edition of the BBP. Paul Diener Jr. and Jim Ossarski, your Bengals beat writers from Cincinnati.com, Cincinnati Inquirer. We are here with you. No, not huddled in the corner of an airport this week. We're in the comfort of our offices. So it's hopefully you'll sense the comfort in the podcast today.
Yeah. You know, it's our feet are firmly planted somewhere. as opposed to whirling around, so which is a nice departure, at least from the last month, it seems like.
Yeah, it's been a little wild. So we've got this. We're fish. All that stuff is behind us now. We're looking forward, and all eyes are on April 27th. Now, man, that's what it's all. That's where we're at. It's all about the draft. So we, you know, often during the year, I feel like there's an antagonistic relationship that you people, and particularly the person who's joining me on this podcast right now, have with my treatment and my feelings about draft season. I love draft season.
I do
love draft season, and that is a misnomer out there that I don't. I do love draft season. I don't like having draft season when it's not draft season because we go deep and we go all in on draft season, okay? And I don't like it when we have to do too much of that early before you can really make a good observation, paint a good picture, really get positive quality intel into where this thing is going to go. And we've been in draft season for a little while now, and we've been embracing it. I think everybody could appreciate that. But now we are full on into it and trying to dive into it. So this month is all draft pods all the time. So everybody can have a good feel for what the Bengals are going to be doing. 11 picks, huge draft. It's a big deal, and we're going to try to cover everything for you. Later on in the podcast today, as these go on throughout the month, we're going to have different draft experts type, you know, from all different walks of the draft life. For you. So today we're going to have Dane Brugler from CBS Sports. He has an unbelievable draft guide that if you care about the draft, you should buy. It's just $10. It's got everything you could want to know about every single player. Tons of great information in there. So we're going to have him join later. That'll be at the back end of the podcast. So if you're sick of me and Jim, scroll to the end. You can go listen to Dane. We'll be talking a lot about draft prospects. Until then, we're going to talk offense today. You like offense, Jim, don't you?
I do. I do like offense.
I like offense. I like touchdowns. I like – and you know what? We're going to toss specialists in here today.
Wow.
Because we can't forget about them.
Well, yeah, you know what? Clark Harris
– forgotten about them.
No. And I was going to say Clark Harris has proven that long snappers are people too. So – I don't think we'll talk about any long snappers, but, I mean, they still count, kind of.
Yes, we'll talk about kickers. We will talk about kickers, and that's still in play because I can tell you Randy Bullock will not be the only guy in camp. And you know, Jonathan Brown, assuming he's still, I don't know, learning how to kick.
Right.
The guy who had never kicked before, who when the Bengals signed him to a contract last year, the
the media staff had to call down to Louisville to get a photo to send out, and they were like, "Wait, the kicker guy?
Yeah,
you think someone wants him?
Yeah,
are you kidding me?
Yeah. Oh my god. Well, we'll revisit. I'll have to tell you. Yeah, I got a fun story about that one. So we'll get back to John Brown and who?
John Brown. I'm writing that down as a note. I'm writing that down as a note to make sure we get to the John Brown story.
It'll be the first and last time we talk about John Brown.
Yeah. You never know. Maybe he's going to win the job.
Yeah, you're true about that.
All right. So we're gonna get into offense on this podcast. So let's kind of just go down the list. Quarterback is a pretty strong position for this club right now.
Yeah.
They have their starter. They have one of the best backups in the league who is desired. And I guess we can maybe touch on AJ McCarron trade situation. You heard some last week from Mike Brown about that, which, by the way, quick side note, thank you to everybody who listened. Set a record, and really two times the record for most listens to the BBP. We've had some pretty good numbers this offseason, but this was literally off the charts. I was just looking at the chart, and it was off of it. So thanks to everybody that listened to last week's podcast. It was, obviously there's a reason everyone was listening. Mike Brown, a lot of conversation with Mike Brown, all the stuff about Adam Jones, Marvin Lewis talking about not valuing guards and calling people out. And so it was obviously good. If you haven't heard it yet, go, join the crowd, and go back and listen last week. But anyway, thanks to everybody for listening. That was crazy seeing some of the numbers of people, of listens there. But anyway, quarterback. So they're in a good situation there. The McCarron trade situation possibility, is the only reason, really, and I don't know, from my perspective, maybe you see it differently, Jim, is really the only thing that you really, the reason they would be looking closely at quarterbacks at this point.
Yeah, because while that situation is pretty similar to a year ago, I mean, I'm sure someone could dial up a podcast from about this time and be like, well, they're set at quarterback unless they trade AJ McCarron. But really, the biggest difference, Paul, is Jeff Driscoll. Because I would have, again, just going by history and the way the Bengals do things, I'd have a really hard time thinking they carried a third quarterback on its 53-man roster all year long to not give him a shot in rookie camp or training camp to at least find out if he can run their offense. And just so a reminder for people, what I mean by that is Jeff Driscoll, as a third-string quarterback, does not really take snaps running the Bengals offense, calling the Bengals plays. His role in 2016 was largely scout team, opponent quarterback looks. And really, Bill Lazor said the only time he spent with Jeff Driscoll was pre-games on Sundays, throwing to stationary targets. So that's what I mean by that. If fans were kind of unsure what I meant there. So they have three quarterbacks that they carried on their roster. Not saying they wouldn't take one. Clearly doing due diligence, our buddy Aaron Wilson down in Houston reported that Bill Lazor, Bengals quarterback coach, privately worked out Texas Tech QB Pat Mahomes, which is interesting because I think Pat, when the college season ended, and to your point, the way you started this podcast, Paul, what was he? Like, people were thinking, oh, like fourth or fifth round pick. And then in that story that Aaron wrote about it, it was like, Mahomes is expected to go in the first round. So, so maybe the Bengals have a fifth round grade on him, which is why they would send their quarterback coach out to work him out. because they're definitely not taking a quarterback at number 9 or 41. So, I think they have 11 picks. I think it's possible, Paul. Late, but again, like a year ago. What do they do with the two other guys they have behind Andy Dalton first? In my opinion,
Yeah. Well, and at a certain point, if you were, what is Jeff Driscoll, right? I mean, he's He's a fifth, sixth, seventh round pick type of guy.
Right.
That you're hoping to develop, and they really don't know anything about him. I mean, like you said, he has hardly even done anything in practice. This is going to be an offseason to learn that and a preseason to learn that. But when you're – they are in a competition with this third quarterback thing for to find someone, and if that means two people competing – for the position to take over for A.J. McCarron when he's gone.
Right.
Whether that is on draft day, whether that is during the preseason, whether that is next year, they need to figure out the future of the backup quarterback position
right.
in the long term. And so I absolutely think that they're willing to invest a late-round pick. That's why you get 11 picks.
Right.
You know, it's why you like having 11 picks, because you can address a lot of things that are off the radar like this. Down the line, you can get competition in against Jeff Driskel rather than having winning time. God bless him.
Right.
I mean, one of my favorite stories I got to write last year was his unbelievable performance in the fourth preseason game, and what it meant to him. But you know, you need. I mean, real competition. A guy that could develop into being the next A.J. McCarron. That's how A.J. McCarron got in this spot. He was a fifth round pick.
Right.
So I think that's 100% what they're looking at, and that's where Bill Lazor's at right now. So fifth, sixth, seventh round, you start getting in. If you start finding a guy that you like what he has, maybe you're even talking about Chad Kelly wasn't invited to the combine for, you know, a lot. They obviously love Ole Miss receivers.
Yeah.
You know, they Cody Core, they've shown interest in other receivers there. So, you know, Davis Webb, Jared Evans, I mean, maybe Josh Dobbs. Maybe they can just draft all Tennessee Volunteers. You know, any of these guys. Pick your poison on who they find as an intriguing developmental guy. A.J. McCarron, there was talk, was going to go in the second round, right?
Yeah.
That year of his draft, and he ended up in the fifth, and they nabbed him. The same type of thing could happen with guys they're talking about in the second round now, whether you're talking about Patrick Mahomes. Why couldn't Patrick Mahomes be the next A.J. McCarron?
Right. Yeah, no, it's a good point. And you know who's getting real excited right about now, Paul?
Who's that?
Hot take James.
Hot take James!
Talking about drafting a quarterback. That's happening, by the way. That's happening, by the way.
Have we lined up the fight?
I'll have to run this. We'll work this out off air, Paul, because I don't want to bog people down with the details.
But it's happening.
Hot take James, you know. It's happening, and he's real excited because we're talking about them drafting, you know, potentially a quarterback in like the sixth round. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh man, the big fight! I cannot wait to promote that. It's gonna be amazing. All right, so that I think that's kind of where it stands at quarterback.
Yeah.
I don't want to spend too much time on that. There's a lot of other positions worth getting to, but in my opinion, I think that's where you're at. Let's move on to running backs and. This is obviously where it gets really interesting. You know, there is a clear pattern here with the Bengals and running back. And I explain this. I have my latest – I did a three-round mock. I have not gone full Monty 7,
no.
11 picks yet. I'm trying to work my way up. It's a gradual thing.
Yep.
It's a gradual. I saw some people at opening day the other day. When's the seven-round mock coming out? Mainly because people like to get under my skin, Jim.
Right.
So it's a gradual build-up to the crescendo of the seven-round mock draft at the end. Don't worry. That's all coming. You'll get – everyone will get it, so relax. But I had the three-round, and in the second I projected Alvin Kamara from Tennessee at 41 as a running back. Look, there's history here. There's Giovanni Bernard. There's Jeremy Hill, both second-round running backs. And people could say throw history out, but this team likes to do things the same way in pretty much every operation that they do.
Yes.
So don't believe for a second that they're not thinking, how do we recreate the Giovanni Bernard, Jeremy Hill type situation. And you have a chance in a draft with so many good running backs to get a first-round talent early in the second round. There's value there. And I think that's what Alvin Kamara could be. I just don't see them, you know, maybe Fournette is there at 9. I doubt it. There's just too many teams that want that. And he's a perfect fit for Carolina. I don't see him getting past Carolina. Outside of him being there, I don't see them taking anybody at 9. So then you start weighing what they could do and get the latest in that second round pick mode.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, Paul. And they've made it clear, I mean, from the beginning, you know, going back to the Senior Bowl and even the Combine, that running back is a position they're going to address, and that they felt good about this class. I'm not breaking any news there. Fournette's the interesting one to me, Paul, because I think they would think real hard about it at 9, but I also think they would entertain moving back. I don't know if that means just because Fournette's there or if he's not there. You know what I mean? That's a whole other conversation. I guess we can approach at some other point. But I think the fact that they would consider Leonard Fournette speaks to how they want to approach that position, I guess. Like, instead of – what I mean by that is I definitely agree with you and your recent mock with that second round pick being a running back, as opposed to, you know, when way earlier at some point, I think you and I were like, you could get a running back in the 5th round, which is true. But I think as you've found out and talked to people and you know, I hope most people know that you don't just like do mocks for the sake of like putting names out, like you're actually talking to people and putting in the work to do so. So like that's coming from somewhere. And I just, and you're right. I think that's a strong possibility. It's really curious to me if they would follow in the footsteps of recent teams like the Chargers or Rams, or Cowboys. And if Fournette's sitting there at 9, I would be really, that'd be a fascinating 6.5 minutes before that card goes up for us watching that room. Cause I think they would really think about it, in my opinion, but yeah,
I do too. I think they would, I mean, I think they would want to do it. I do at 9. It's a position they have left wide open. It's one they clearly care about. I mean, that people don't even talk about the fact that, yeah, when they were spending second round picks on running backs, they were taking the first running back selected.
Right.
Okay. Giovanni Bernard was the first running back selected. Jeremy Hill was just barely the second by a pick. These guys, they have not given up on the running back like a lot of people have. And in this draft of all drafts, and like you mentioned earlier, Duke Tobin literally told us, we are taking a running back. And then they backed that up when they let Rex Burkhead walk.
Right.
And this is what we've been talking about since the beginning when we did our personal moves the Bengals need to make. This is how this is the perfect spot. It's the perfect hit of a draft that's deep in the position to get the pick of your running back of the future while your other guys phase out for a year. It's how they love to do it. So you'll get one more year of Jeremy Hill in some capacity. And the new guy coming in, and then Jeremy Hill will walk, and you'll have the new guy and Giovanni Bernard into the future.
Right.
Who that is now, and that's so. Then if you say, okay, if Fournette's there, I just don't think he will be.
Right.
The speed power combo is so rare that someone is going to want that. Someone is going to see Ezekiel Elliott and Leonard Fournette and take him. Now, does that mean I don't think that Dalvin Cook is the guy they would take at 9? I don't think McCaffrey is the guy they would take at 9. So I think then you start looking into the second round, and you see what's there too, because they very easily could go defensive. They could go pass rusher if they felt like it was there. Or maybe an offensive line help at that point makes more sense. The name everyone wants to bring up is Joe Mixon, and I absolutely believe the Bengals would take him at 41 if he was there, but I also don't think he's going to be there at 41. Unless he's off your draft board, teams are going to have a hard time saying no. If they like, he can play. It's not a matter of judging whether he can or can't play. It's a judging whether you're willing to put up with it. And if you're willing to put up with it, so he's on your draft board, and clearly he is by the visits he's taking, by what teams have said, then you're probably going to take him whenever you think he should go. And getting a value is going to dissipate because you just want to get that talent. And I think somebody at the end of the first, or maybe the first couple of picks of the second, will take Joe Mixon. I just think they will. They'll be willing to take the heat and deal with it because, you know, he's a player, and that's how the NFL works.
Yeah, first of all, you're 100% right. I've gathered the same things about Joe Mixon. There was a reason the Bengals were the first team that he visited of the dozen. And I think there is, and honestly, I think there is something to order and that type of thing. Bengals can control. It's not like a recruiting visit where, you know, it's a free agent. But you're right. I think they would do that. And put it this way, Joe Mixon's fate, at least when it comes to Cincinnati, maybe decided partially by that for Leonard Fournette and those first eight picks, because the draft order is largely the same at the start of the second round. And, you know, are the Chargers with Melvin Gordon, first round pick, or Rams with Todd Gurley, first round pick, or Chicago with, you know, their rookie of the year, second year running back, you know, if the Jets or Carolina take Fournette? I mean, so Cleveland, San Francisco, what if they don't take a QB in the first round? So you're right. Obviously, a lot would have to happen. He's visited with teams at the back end of the first round as well. But you're right, Paul. He can play. I mean, Mel Kiper's come out and said he is the best. I mean, I think he came out and said he's the best running back, right? Like, mm-hmm. Just on pure talent.
A lot of people have it very close between Mixon and Fournette, pure talent-wise. I mean, Mixon really does do everything on the field. I mean, he's big. He's 6'1", 228 pounds, but he's fast. He ran a 4.45. And he really can catch and move out of the backfield. He's only 20.
Yeah.
So he's young, and he's got less tread
right
on his tires. On top of it all,
yeah, he took a year off, if I remember correctly, didn't he? Yeah, he took a year off.
Right, okay. Right. And so, I mean, he's everything that you would want out of the running back position. Particularly, I mean, I remember talking to Ken Zampezi at the combine, and him, the first thing he said when we talked about the type of running back you want, he said, "Want a guy that can catch and really play out of the backfield
right
as a receiver." He loves that element, and that's what a guy like Mixon would be. That's what a guy like Kamara would be. Curtis Samuel of Ohio State, who you could watch if you wanted to watch the Ohio State Pro Day, watch Bengals running backs coach Kyle Kasky try to break a sweat, working him out. There's an interest in that type of guy. I also think you can find that type of guy further down in the draft. I do. Whether you're talking about, Jeremy McNichols out of Boise or TJ Logan from North Carolina, there's guys. I mean, you know, you want the ultimate dude with tons of numbers, Donnell right Pumphrey from San Diego State, breaking all-time rushing records. There are guys that have things that they're missing but can do what you need and maybe develop. And look at how many quality running backs have come out of those rounds. Right. There are a lot of guys I think that you can get. And like we mentioned, value, a first-round value in the second, you could probably get a second-round value in the fourth, because a lot of teams that would take running backs already got them so high up on this round. I think there's a lot of value in there too, so it's not a big deal if day two goes by and they haven't got a running back yet. But I would be pretty surprised. I wouldn't say I'd be shocked. I'd be surprised if we got to day three and they didn't have a running back yet.
Yeah, and I think that again, that just goes to history. And I think the Bernard and Hill picks to me, Paul. Obviously, I wasn't covering the team when those guys were selected, but you know, for a team that goes by their board, best player available, all the cliches, they clearly are not afraid to rate a running back that high. And I guess you're right. I think I'll flip it the other way. Woo, big controversial thing here. I think I would be surprised if we got to Saturday and one of those first three was not a running back.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you too. I think it is. I think that second round or third round, probably more likely at 41. I just think if it's Kamara or Mixon or maybe another guy that they have a really good feeling, or maybe they think they can turn Curtis Samuel into more of a running back and not really as much as a Percy Harvin type. I mean, Curtis Samuel ran a 4.31. You can probably figure out something to do with that. And he's obviously can catch with as much time as he spent at wideout at Ohio State. You know, I think if there's a nice snug fit there, they like where that would fit into their 53, into their roster. So I think that's where that stands right now. A reminder to everybody, coming up, we're going to be doing a position-by-position look at what to expect out of this draft. From the Bengals coming up. It's later this month. That'll lead you right up to the draft. So we'll go even deeper into the actual people, the actual prospects that would be sleepers, the top guys, and some thoughts from those within and outside the organization on some of the guys that would be Bengal fits and things like that. So keep an eye out for all that. All that is coming. We're just kind of giving you a quick run through of where it all stands right now, because you know what? We like to give the early look to the BBP folk. So let's talk a little bit more. Let's move into receiver. I think a receiver, I had the first of the Bengals at 9 series opened a little more than a week ago, and I talked about Corey Davis and Mike Williams. Corey Davis from Western Michigan, Mike Williams from Clemson. Also a little bit in there about John Ross from Washington, the guy who broke the combine 40 record. And, you know, I think they're an option. I wrote about them because they're in the discussion. And that at some point they had to work their way through it. I think where they sit right now, I think that ship has sailed on a receiver at 9. I just feel like when you look at what they have on the roster, re-signing Brandon LaFell, a lot of love for the current – the trio that they drafted last year developing – I think adding that like top 10 pick weapon at 9, I don't know that it fits them right now in their mind. I don't think it does. I think they're looking for a over the top type of guy that has a lot of speed, but they of where that's what he does, and there's some where there's some value in it.
Yeah, I think you're right, Paul. And, you know, we started this podcast by saying, you know, we like offense and touchdowns. I mean, I was on the draft a receiver at 9 bandwagon, I guess, if you will, like very, very early on. I think when we first maybe talked about some of this, might have been the bowl season, for all I know, if I remember, or whatever, like late, maybe, you know, and or maybe Senior Bowl-ish time. I don't even recall, but and that was mainly because I you're right, I kind of forgot about how effusive Marvin Lewis specifically was about not just Tyler Boyd, but Cody Core and Alex Erickson. You know, I think them waving James Wright, you know, said something to that, at least with Cody Core, in my opinion, you know, because Cody Core appeared on special teams late in the year, you know what I mean? And, you know, he had that nice long catch, a contested catch, and late in the season as well. So you're right. Maybe they, you know, have just decided when they look at the group of players they could have at 9 or 41, those top guys. Either A wouldn't be there or are not better than the edge rusher / running back, right? And then maybe in this on day 3, that's where the next group is. I don't know. It sounds like that's what you've kind of discovered a little bit. Is
yeah, that's kind of what I think you get is day 3, guy with a lot of skills but the one that he's great. You know, Marvin Lewis, one of his favorite draft sayings is, they better have one thing that they do incredibly well that can be the reason that they stay here. And then you can try to work at the rest. And I think where they're at with that is they want one guy who can do the deep ball incredibly well. And that they can, and they can teach the rest to that they could pick on day three. And I do think that that makes some sense. I love the idea of a Corey Davis at nine, personally. I mean, I've promoted that. I think he's going to be a great player. I think he's a scary weapon if you start thinking about him across from A.J. Green, with Tyler Boyd in the slot. But they clearly invested $10 million in Brandon LaFell, and they like the development. I mean, anybody would like, as a 3, 4, and 5, Tyler Boyd and Cody Core. You know, that's what those guys are. And there's development there, and you've seen some good things. You think they could be something. They miss. They don't have an over the top threat. Yeah. They don't. That's obviously AJ Green. He's at every threat. Right. But you know, they don't have that guy who is like what Will Fuller was last year. They loved Will Fuller last year, despite the fact that he can't catch. And so they want maybe another guy. So whether you're talking about, you know, D'Angelo Yancey out of Purdue did that. Quincy Adebojo, the kid from Ole Miss, is a deep threat type guy. You know, Josh Reynolds from Texas A&M, a guy I've talked about him actually when we were at the Combine, who he believes, and he has some tape to back it up, that he's the best deep ball threat in this draft. Those types of guys where they do that great and you can teach the rest, I think that's where they're going to end up landing at receiver in this draft. And I don't see a day one pick for – I definitely don't see 9. I don't see 41. Maybe – and after that, anything is up for grabs if it's the right guy. But more than likely, I'd say day 3, over-the-top threat that they can teach to do more that would fill in, take James Wright's place, basically.
Yeah. You know what I'm kind of sad about this discussion, Paul?
What's that?
This is, I think, this is my third draft with you, and I think the first one where, I mean, the fervor last year wasn't as high as it was in 15. Receiver! You know what?
Yes, I was right.
You proved to be correct, and that is, I think that only goes to show that, we should be consulted again. Our personnel moves and things that we say should happen either have happened, or if they don't happen,
we've been vindicated on.
Yes. So it is a little different for me to hear receivers kind of pushed so far down the list.
I know.
After several years.
Now, look, I like receivers because I saw the difference in the offense when they had a quality number two weapon compared to when they did. When Marvin Jones got hurt, when Mohamed Sanu was out, and when those things were missing, the offense struggled, particularly in the red zone. They needed to fill that in. Now, I still look at this team and don't know that they have a top second weapon, but they do have Tyler Eifert. They need him healthy. And, you know, do you count on development of Tyler Boyd? I mean, there's no reason Tyler Boyd can't be Marvin Jones or Mohamed Sanu or some combination of the two. You're expecting big jumps between years 1 and 2 from a receiver. Historically, it happens a lot. And you saw them come along as the last year went along. So it's not as pressing. I'm not a just receiver guy. I just know team needs when I see them. And they need a quality option opposite A.J. Green to make the whole thing home.
Right.
That's just my opinion. That's the way I feel. And I was vindicated because that's what they were missing last year, and everybody knows it. So should have taken Tyler Lockett, like I said 3 years ago.
Yep.
All right. Anyway, let's move on. Let's go to – I want to briefly touch on tight end because I wrote about O.J. Howard today as an option at 9. If you haven't seen that series, that's also up on Cincinnati.com. Not just about – it's about the concept of O.J. Howard. So I had – you know I love charts and graphs, Jim. You know I do.
You do, and you're so good at
that. This might be the only thing I love more than a quality number two receiver is a chart. I couldn't help it when you look. I went back to 2010 and plotted out every position and how many of them have been drafted. You know, obviously, corners are way up there. Defensive tackles, defensive ends are way up there for the number of picks. The few, not counting specialists, you know, they're people too, but we're not counting them in this. The position that had the fewest people drafted in the first round was tight end with three. And two of those were by the Bengals. So most people would say tight end in the first round, no way. Well, this is a great year for tight ends. There is a tight end that should be drafted in the first round. And the Bengals have a history of doing it. And there they are at nine, where that guy would be an intriguing option in O.J. Howard. The most complete guy. He can block. He can run. He ran a 4.45. I mean, what are the Bengals? You know what the Bengals' favorite play probably is all go. Four out, all go with, right, like A.J. Green and, in this case, Brandon LaFell, Tyler Eifert, and another tight end or Tyler Boyd running out. If they could go and be in with two tight ends and split out to all go with a dude running a 4.45 and Tyler Eifert up the other seam, and oh, by the way, A.J. Green on the edge, that's a frightening fit to exactly what they love to do. That's what O.J. Howard did great at Alabama. And he can block very well. But the fallout of that is, here's Tyler Eifert in a contract year.
Yeah.
And a lot of wondering about his extension. Is he too injury prone to be given an extension? What are you going to do? Are you going to make him prove he can play a full year before you go beyond this fifth year option? What are you going to do? And if you draft O.J. Howard, if both stay healthy, you have an incredible 1-2 punch.
Right.
If Eifert goes down, you have insurance for that top tight end, which they clearly need. And going into the future, you can decide if Tyler Eifert's not worth paying, you have another option. That's a snugger fit than I think most would realize.
Yeah, it's you know, and you know, you were that was really well done on your part there, Paul, to move an O.J. Howard in. He was an impressive young man. I got to talk to him a little bit at the Senior Bowl, saw him work out there. That's sort of where he began to distance himself from Alabama. And what I mean by that is obviously in that offense, you know, he just wasn't the guy who was going to, you know, generate a lot of headlines. I think people saw potential. But you're right. Hey, look, I've been on the Tyler Eifert should play out 2017 train for I don't know how long at this point, if you're the Bengals. Because, I mean, the guy's played one full season out of four. And look, Tyler Croft and CJ Uzama, you know, fifth round for Uzama. I mean, Tyler Croft was a third round pick.
Yeah,
I mean, a guy I haven't seen run a pattern. You know what I mean? I mean,
he's just a proven just a guy to this point.
So look, man, that's, you know, we talked about, you know, and we brought this up a little bit with some of the offensive line stuff when Andrew Whitworth left in free agency, and you know, when you make a certain pick in a draft, what does it mean for other picks you made at that position prior to? So I think, let's just say O.J. Howard at nine. I'm not talking about another tight end in the fourth round or with one of your extra comp picks. Specifically, O.J. Howard at nine. I think to me, Paul, is a ripple effect because I don't think it seals Tyler Eifert's fate necessarily. I think two tight ends of that skill level, and the fact that O.J. Howard, let's be real, is cost-controlled for 5 years, exactly. I don't think that precludes Tyler Eifert getting an extension, but I think what it does do is it puts C.J. Uzama on the roster bubble, and it makes you wonder, clearly they think Tyler Croft is only a blocking tight end, and at that point it's like, well, we already gave Ryan Hewitt an extension. You know what I mean? So I think it would speak to how they view a big part of their class of 15, which if you want to throw PJ Dawson in there, is not looking real good right now. You know, if you were to draft Howard at nine, You know what I mean? Like, I mean, we could get it. I mean, Obwehi and Fish are two other things. But honestly, if we're sitting there on Thursday night, Paul, and that name comes across the board, yes, I agree with you wholeheartedly, your evaluation of him and his fit in the offense. My head would immediately spin towards all that other stuff.
Right.
And like what it means.
Because that's what it is. To right. me, it the pick is more about the fallout than what shows up. But you're right. So what do they have? So then let's say they did extend Tyler Eifert. That position has one big contract and one rookie contract
right.
for the duration of it. You're going to give Tyler a 4 or 5 year extension.
Right.
Well, that's the duration of O.J. Howard. So if you could know that you could have that combo, you know, with one big tight end contract, that's a good deal.
Yeah.
You know, and then C.J. Uzomah and Tyler Kroft can fight out for the third tight end position and whatever.
Right.
You know, but you're dangerous then. I just think it's a better fit than people realize. And but you're right. I can tell you one of my favorite locker room days of the year is the Monday after the draft.
Right.
It's you always know what happened because it's where the media is all crowded around one guy's locker to ask him about who got picked. A couple years ago, it was Andre Smith and Andrew Whitworth.
Right.
You know, last year it was Drake Kirkpatrick and Adam Jones. And this year, maybe we'll be standing at Tyler Eifert's locker. Who knows?
Right.
So let's move on to the reason the Bengals are not going to be good next year in the offensive line. you know, let's be honest. Maybe they will be good, but there's a question at pretty much every spot, and some of them are giant question marks.
Yeah.
You know what kind of question marks they are, Jim? They're a body MT condensed extra bold.
Extra bold?
Extra bold! You know, I'm going to start getting more font references into my stories. I feel like that went over really well.
It did go over really well.
So I'm gonna find a way to sneak a Helvetica into something here very soon. maybe even an Ariel. I don't know if I could do an Ariel, but so let's talk about the offensive line. Here's the thing, Bengals fans. They feel like they have addressed this position.
Yeah.
And I think anybody in their right mind can see it and say, yeah, you haven't. And there's so that you clearly don't know what Cedric Obwehi's going to be. And they need to start considering a backup plan there at left tackle because they really don't have one outside of, you know, Jake Fisher moving over to left tackle. If Cedric Obwehi were hurt or was so terrible, you could move Jake Fisher to left tackle and
right.
Andre Smith to right tackle and Christian Westerman to right guard. That suits you. But in the long term, if Cedric Obwehi does not work, at the very least, they need to find a solid backup left tackle or right tackle and or right guard or starter or in center. Russell Wodine going into the last year of his deal.
Oh, that's extension all the way, Paul. Come on.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Break the bank. So I just – there is a lot – that needs to happen here, and there's not a lot of places to do it. You know, they probably will start looking into it the third round on, and try to find somebody they feel like can develop that can be a fit. Where in a year or so, maybe more, can take over. You know,
yeah.
Unfortunately for them, there isn't anybody really in certainly at nine. It's out, not happening. There's right nobody up, there. Yeah. There's too many other needs. It's not happening at 41. Probably not happening for a lot of the reasons we've already talked about on this podcast. So you're looking elsewhere. It's them believing that they have invested in this position already with Obwehi and Fisher and Westerman. And need to figure out, you know, every position though is of need. So from the, There probably should be a couple selected with those last eight, nine picks.
Right.
Day three should be littered with offensive linemen, whether it's a center, whether it's a guard, whether it's a left tackle that they can develop. That's there's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I you know, it's interesting because this obviously loops into the conversation we just had about tight end and the guys they drafted in 15 there. I mean, you know, you always have to draft for depth and best player available. But, Paul, I'll be honest. I mean, I'm not a draft Nick. I don't have a wealth of knowledge of, like, the best classes for certain positions. But it seems like, this draft in particular, like, no one's excited about any lineman at any point. And it's like, you know, you hear like a Cam Robinson, it's like, well, he could be like a good guard.
Yeah.
You know what right. I mean? Like, if that's like your best, I don't know. So you're right. I think there should be some volume, you know, later. I also wouldn't be surprised if there's only just a couple. Mm-hmm. In that, I think they give a real hard look to Alex Redmond. They give a real hard look at Christian Westerman, and then, you know, maybe you get those day three picks. You know, a couple of those extra ones. You're right. I can't even, Paul, I'll be honest, I can't even pull out names for you guys because I think. And we will later in our series, but I just, it's, I don't know. I mean, the Bengals don't cut draft picks. They'd find a way to roster the guy, but it's unexciting. And I think it's a bad spot and really they need to hope their plan in 15. You mentioned going to guys the day after the draft. they need that to look really good this spring. With the guys they have. Yeah. I think the 2017 O-line draft happened a year and 2 years ago. I don't know. I just – so yeah. Sure. Yes, they should draft a couple guys, one who can play center, another one who can play guard. I don't even know if they can – if there's a tackle out there, Paul. You're going to draft a tackle in the fifth round? I mean, I don't think so. Right. You know what I mean? I just don't buy that. I don't think the Bengals are a team either. They tend to draft.
The only reason they might, if it was a complete developmental right. type of guy that literally would take 2 to 3 years to learn. That's the only way you get a good tackle like that. And right. they, you know, historically have never done that.
Right. Exactly.
But it could just be because they have so many picks, they have that luxury and the problem there. So sorry, Bengals fans. There's not a lot of help in this draft for you when we're talking about that position of need. So, again, we will get deeper into all of these as the series in the paper and online begins in a few weeks, which will lead you right up to the first day of the draft, which is April 27th. It'll be 3 days, 27th, 28th, and 29th. Drafts in Philadelphia, but we will be here near the war room, which I hate that term, the draft room. Yeah. At Paul Brown Stadium, bringing you all the coverage from all of that. All right, we have gone through the offense. Oh, you know what? I'm pushing specialists back, you know, because it's a teaser for the next week. Bring people back next week because they want to hear us talk about Zane Gonzalez.
Does that mean you're screwing John Brown? You're screwing John Brown.
Oh, the John Brown story. I just don't want to go too late. We got Dane Bruno coming on. I don't want people to listen forever. But you know what?
Tease it.
All right. Tuck the John Brown story away. Write it on your calendar for next week's podcast. We're bringing John Brown back next week to hear the great John Brown story. This is going to – you know what? The numbers are going to blow away the Mike Brown. It's all about John Brown.
It is.
That's what it – no doubt. But I will find out why you're mad. And hopefully it's not because you didn't get to tell your John Brown story.
No. Okay. And I think people know this about us, but I don't know if we've really gotten into it. I think I've mentioned it over – our time together on the beat. You are, in my opinion, more amenable and open to advanced analytics across all sports. You're into it with football. I mean, you do the PFF stuff. In general, I am the other way. I appreciate that they exist. I respect the work. I think they add value. And this goes to baseball. Baseball, obviously, is the beginning of these analytics. Bill James, many, many decades ago. And I think there's value there, too, in an individual sport such as that. However, one thing that really just it was a channel changer for me, and it totally, I don't see the value in this at all. It was ESPN deciding to kind of ruin people's opening days with win probability being put on screen on the box, on the, like, the box score. Like, I don't, it's the first inning, and it's 0-0. Like, I don't, and look, even when it's the eighth inning, and it's 7-2, like, I don't, first of all, I'm sure there's good math behind all of that, right? But, that really just irritated me to no end, because I was like, we are watching humans play a sport. Like, you know what I mean? It's just, it was, I don't understand the purpose of that stat. I don't care about it. I know, I think there was times, I mean, I'll be honest, Paul, I think you've written about it at some point about the Bengals had a whatever probability chance to win, and then Jeremy Hill fumbled, and then all that happened, and then they lost. Like, yes. Because they're humans playing a game, and that's what happens, and I just, oh, it really just, you know.
And when it's 7-2 in the eighth inning, I do not need a number to tell me that they're probably going to lose.
Right. I just, you know, I get it. I'm okay with showing some advanced metrics and stats on screen. It's not just like average RBI home run anymore. I get it. I can roll with all that stuff. I'm not so much the Sunday Night Football PFF grade. I'm not ready really to go there yet, but and no offense to those guys that we love so dearly down in downtown Cincinnati. But it's just, but the win probability, I mean, that to me is just, it's like, yeah. It's too far.
All right. You know, here's why I'm happy. And I'm sticking with the opening day with the baseball theme here. I'm happy because I being from Cincinnati originally, having moved away and come back, when I was gone, I missed opening day a ton. It's just great to, here's why. It's not about the Reds. It is partially about the Reds. I mean, in theory, at its core, it's about, oh, baseball and the Reds. But it's not. It's like 20% about the Reds. It's 50% about Cincinnati, and 30% about, like, summer. You know?
Right.
Just a celebration of the city. And the city is so alive on opening day. It's a great day to just walk around downtown. The parade, I can do without the parade, tell you the truth. It's very nice. It's cute. Great. I can do without the parade. Just walking around downtown, everybody's excited. Everybody's in red. Doesn't matter. The Reds are going to stink and lose like 100 games. No big deal. Because everyone is excited about baseball. And it is just such a cool day. It's such a fun day. It's just such a fun thing to be a part of. We have a ton of coverage of it up there on Cincinnati.com. If you haven't seen, it's a great video that Paul Daugherty at Doc voiced over, and our team of video people did. It's fantastic. You check it out on the website, Cincinnati.com. Watch it. This is Our Game, I believe, is the title of it. That kind of encapsulates that a little bit. Anyway, I love opening day. I love it in Cincinnati. They do it better than anybody else. It's about the city, and I love this city. So that's why I'm happy today. And I'm not mad about win probability like you are.
Well, you know, yeah. I can definitely appreciate that also. And that's a good reason to be happy, Paul. I'm happy you're happy that the 513 represented in that way.
Yes. Oh, man. All right. Well, make sure, speaking of representing, we need to get to Dane Brugler from CBS Sports. Draft expert. His draft guide is out now. You can pick it up. It's fantastic. I'll have him give you all the information on how to do that. And then we'll have him go, and then we'll come back real quick after that and wrap it up. So here's Dane Brugler. All right, now joining on the BVP is Dane Brugler, CBS Sports, NFL Draft Scout.com. Follow him on Twitter at DP
Brugler. And, of course, as I've been telling you all podcast, pick up the draft guide. It is as in-depth as anything that you could have for this month as you're trying to get prepped for the draft. Make sure you pick it up. I already have it. It's fantastic. It's in-depth. Great work on the draft guide again this year, Dane.
Well, I appreciate that, Paul. The motto, if I had to pick one for the draft guide, is no detail is too small. You know, it's something that, I've spent the last 10 months basically of my life trying to, do research on these guys, obviously evaluate them, and put it all into a 200-page PDF document with, 450 reports and all the rankings and all the information that you could possibly need. So I think the value of my guide is, everyone knows about the first and second round guys, but it's day three, fifth, sixth, seventh round when your team drafts a guy from, Albany State that you want to figure out, okay, what's this guy about? That hopefully you can go to my guide and, figure out everything you need to know about him.
Wow, Albany State, nice pull. I used to work in Albany, and I've been to a couple of Albany State games, believe it or not. Not much NFL talent there, so it's definitely obscure if you find a guy from there, I can tell you that much.
They have a defensive lineman this year, actually. So
yeah, well, hey,
they might actually have a guy drafted. We'll see.
It's about time. Yeah. I want to jump into a few things that are Bengals centric. You have a lot of details in the back end of this draft. We'll get to it soon. But Bengals fans are not used to being able to be very specific in looking at prospects in the first round. Usually they're thinking 21, 24, could be anybody. Now at 9. There's a pretty good look at who it's probably going to be and who's going to be available. You have in your latest, which I believe just came out today, Derek Barnett. I also have Derek Barnett from Tennessee, a defensive end. Tell me what you like about him, and particularly the measurables versus tape conversation seems to come up with him.
Right, and that's something that ideally you want the tape and the athletic testing and the numbers all to match up. That's not always the case, and Derek Barnett's a perfect example. He's 6'3", 260 pounds, and, the numbers aren't flashy. They're not like Myles Garrett, but I think we expected that to a certain extent. But what is impressive is his tape and his production. He's the most productive collegiate pass rusher in this draft, especially in the SEC, 52 tackles for loss, 33 sacks over his three-year career. He entered college just really well-built for the college game, and so he was able to make an impact from day one, and he's continued that. He's not a guy that's going to be overly flashy, but he understands how to play the position. I'm talking about hand tactics, timing, ball awareness. He's not the most explosive player, but he makes up for it in other ways. He can be just as disruptive against the pass as he is against the run. So he's a true, three down player, very reliable, who he's not going to hurt you when he's on the football field. I'm not sure he's ever going to make a Pro Bowl, but I think he's going to be a reliable player who's not going to hurt you.
So I guess it's probably fair to say, high floor, low ceiling type guy then in that state.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it, because he doesn't have that explosive twitch, to just turn the corner with that natural burst. I think his first step is very good, but I think it's based more on timing than necessarily that initial burst. And so he can get to the quarterback. He can manipulate the edge and get blockers off rhythm, but he just does it in different ways. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. And ideally, you'd like a guy to be an elite athlete and be able to, offer different technical approaches to rushing the pass. And that's something I think Myles Garrett can do, which is why he's the number one overall pick in this draft. Barnett just isn't the same type of athlete, but I do think what he brings from he's very detailed, he's very savvy. And that's why, even though he doesn't have great testing numbers, he is being considered as a possible top 10 pick.
Either way, at some point early in this draft, the Bengals are going to end up with a defensive end. If that doesn't happen at 9, it wouldn't be a shock. If it didn't, there's lots of other directions they could go. They're pretty open that way. But they've got to find somebody. So let's just play the game out and say that they go with somebody else, whether it's, you know, one of the big six or O.J. Howard, whoever. They need to find a defensive end in the second or third round. What are some of the best values for pass rushing 4-3 end? What are some of the best values that you think on day two that you can find that could fill if they don't get a guy like Barnett or whoever is one of their choice pass rushers at 9?
I think if you're looking at a second round, Terrell Basham from Ohio, he kind of makes sense. He's in that similar mold as Barnett where, he has good athletic testing numbers, but he relies more on energy and just his ability to, get the blocker off rhythm with his motor, with what he does with his hands. He needs to get better at some areas, which is, you know, why he's going to be a second round pick, not a first round pick. Get better with his move to move process in terms of, his counters and then breaking down the blocker. But he holds up well versus a run. You like his blend of quickness, power, his length. I think he's a very, very good value pick early on day two somewhere where he's going to come in as a rookie and compete for starting reps pretty quickly. He's almost 6'4", 270 pounds. When you watch him at Ohio, he got better every year. I think the production definitely shows that as well, being the MAC Defensive Player of the Year. So there's a lot to like with Terrell Basham and what he brings to the table.
You know, that's the greatest thing I've ever heard because as an Ohio alum, I can tell you I'm not used to getting to talk about any of my players in these draft conversations. So it's been a while, I think. There's only a few. Maybe Dave Zastaville was one of the last few that I got to talk about. No one wanted to talk about punters back then. So,
we can talk about Blair Brown as well. I think he's somewhere in the early day three area. A small linebacker, but he loved to hit and he plays fast and aggressive. I love me some Blair Brown. I think he's going to be an excellent value pick, probably somewhere in that fourth, fifth round.
More Bobcats. All the Bobcats, I say. That's what we need. I want to – an interesting thing, I think most people have an agreement of the top of this draft defensively. This, these big six players, Myles Garrett, Solomon Thomas, Marshawn Lattimore, Jonathan Allen, Jamal Adams, Malik Hooker. They seem – it's hard to see many people that believe that any of those are going to fall out of the top 10 or down to the Bengals at 9. If there was one that you had to pick that would slip, who do you think could possibly slip and maybe be there at 9?
That's a good question. I guess it'd probably be Jonathan Allen because of the shoulder, the history with his injuries and just projecting him forward. Some teams might be scared off by those shoulders. I think that's possible. I think just based on ability, all these guys are, near locks to be in the top 7-8 picks. But when you factor in the durability and the injuries, some teams might just, they might want to pass. And, with Malik Hooker not being able to work out this spring because of the surgeries that he had after the season, only being a one-year guy, even with that working against him, I think teams would be crazy to pass on him in the top 7-8 picks. And then, same thing with Marshawn Lattimore, same secondary in Columbus, a player who has a history of chronic hamstring issues. It's something that you have to really trust your doctors and your medical staff and say, hey, is this something we have to worry about long term? And as long as the doctors give you two thumbs up, you trust them and you move forward and, with the evaluation. But if they give you any pushback and say, well, this, and this, you might be more inclined to go with a more safe pick there in the top 10. So I think it's possible that maybe a Jonathan Allen or Marshawn Lattimore could slip, but it's not likely. It just really comes down to the medicals.
Yeah. It would seem like you would need teams. The only thing that ever does make great players slip, and often that's teams jumping up for quarterbacks and overvaluing them. It's hard, it's hard to predict that happening this year. But somebody is going to jump or pick a guy that probably is reaching, whether it's the Jets, whether it's the Chargers, Phillip Rivers. Really, after once you get into 7-8, that's when this thing, and the Bengals too at nine, is when it starts to get interesting with maybe teams trying to trade up, trying to get in quarterbacks. But they'd have to go in front of the Jets at six, and maybe at that point somebody flips back. I want to talk to you one thing the Bengals are really interested in is trying to find an over-the-top receiver. Speed, hit the deep ball. Maybe not early in this draft, but maybe on early day three or day two, who's somebody who has a specialty of catching the deep ball that could be a target of these guys, do you think?
Well, I think there are a few guys in this draft, and I think that's what's so good about this wide receiver group is there's a little bit of something for everyone, depending on what type of receiver you're looking for. Taywan Taylor from Western Kentucky, I think he belongs in that discussion with what he's able to do vertically. 41 career receiving touchdowns. What he did the last four seasons for Western Kentucky, just extremely, extremely impressive. And now a big part of that was the fact that, that offense at WKU, they threw it around a lot. But he averaged over 17 yards per catch each of the last 3 years. So Taywan Taylor belongs in that discussion. D.D. Westbrook from Oklahoma, what he did this past year as a senior really put him on the NFL map. He's somewhere that was going to be in that second, third, fourth round conversation. And he's 6 foot, 180 pounds. He's skinny, very rail thin. But his straight line speed is outstanding. He was responsible for 12 touchdowns of at least 40 yards this past year. So I think that fits exactly what you're talking about. And that's something that we saw Will Fuller go first round last year because his ability to be a vertical threat. D.D. Westbrook's not quite on that level. But he's a guy that maybe in the third round you could be looking at as a possible option. So I think there are different players like that can be true vertical threats. And I think we also have to consider John Ross in the first round. What he does with his speed, the 4.22, that's going to get the attention. But he's also a very polished route runner. And so, could John Ross be a surprise pick by the Bengals at number nine? I don't think you can rule that out. It really comes down to, and we talked about the injuries and durability, it comes down to the comfort with his past issues and his ability to stay healthy moving forward. But I think John Ross is a player that if you're looking for a true deep threat and a guy that knows how to uncover, that could be John Ross and potentially help you, from day one in that capacity.
Yeah. Let's do a quick overrated. Who do you hear a lot and see up really high in the draft you think maybe is a little overrated, and then we'll get into your sleepers and your underrated?
Well, I think you could look at safety. Obi Melanfonwu from UConn, tested off the charts at 6'4", 224 pounds. His numbers were just off the charts. And his tape is third-round worthy. That's what I saw. But he's going to go in the first round because of the raw athletic traits. And so I think he's going to be drastically overdrafted because of, he has what you can't teach. And that's what coaches want. They think they can get the rest out of him. But when you watch him on film, he plays just a half tick slow mentally. He's not quick to recognize. And, he's too conservative. And for a safety, it doesn't matter how fast you are. If you're not able to, process everything at the level you're needed to in the NFL level, it really doesn't matter what you run because you're going to be late or you're going to be on your heels and you're going to get run over as a safety. So I think Melifonwu is a player I would draft in the third round, but he's going to be long gone at that point. You look at other safeties in this class. I think Jabril Peppers is going to be a very divisive prospect who's going to be all over the map in terms of what he's going to be at the next level because it's a potential pick. He struggles in coverage, I think you expect him to get better in that area once he has a chance to focus on one position in the NFL. I mean, he was stretched so thin at Michigan, played so many different positions over the years, from corner to nickel to safety to linebacker, then also on offense, all the packages they had as a return man as well. So I think once he gets to the NFL, can focus on one position, he will be a much better player, but that's a projection. And you are taking him with the expectation he'll get much better in coverage, which is a big jump. It's a big belief to have. So I think Jabril Peppers will be all over the map. He'll probably end up being drafted higher than I would take him, but I understand it with the athleticism.
All right, so when you dig as deep as you did, you get a few guys that you just love that no one talks about. Who's your top one or two sleepers that you just stand on the table for and say, man, people need to be paying more attention to these guys?
One of my guys this year is Adam Shaheen from Ashland, a Division II tight end, and I don't even know if he qualifies as a sleeper anymore. I've been screaming at up the mountaintops the last few months, and I think a lot of people have realized just how good this guy is. For 6'6" and a half, 278 pounds, runs a 4.7, and you watch him on film, and he's beating up this Division II competition, featured dentist and accountant. So how do you take that into account against what he's going to face at the NFL level? It's a big projection as well, but with everything I've seen with Adam Shaheen, I feel good about him translating those skills to have NFL success. I think his issues are based more on inexperience, not necessarily the lack of talent. So Adam Shaheen, Ashland tight end, is a player I'd be willing to take in a top 50.
Yeah, that he you never know. He could end up being a play. Duke Tobin was talking about him actually at the combine and saying very similar things to what you were saying. The more he saw, the more you watch, the more you really start to understand this guy has next level written all over him. Well, Dan, I appreciate you taking some time to chat with us again. You've done the podcast every year, and every year I know my listeners and I really appreciate it. So thanks again, and make sure everybody pick up the draft guide. What's the easiest way for people to pick up the draft guide, Ding?
The easiest way is on my Twitter, at DP Brugler. I have it pinned at the top. You just click the link. And it's under $10. It's an automatic PDF download. So as soon as you put in your information, a PDF document will immediately, there's a link that you click. The PDF document will download to your computer. Just make sure you save it so you have it, and you'll be all set. So appreciate everyone checking it out, and it's really something that I take a lot of pride in. So, I really appreciate all the favorable feedback I've received.
Absolutely. Well, you earned it, and now get through this draft and then start looking at next year, right? That's pretty much how it goes.
That's it. It's a 365-day type of thing, but that's the grind's the best part of it. So it's a lot of fun. So I appreciate you having me on, talk about these players. It's going to be a fun next few weeks as we try to connect the dots even more and figure out where these guys are going to end up.
Absolutely. Hey, thanks a lot, Dane. Appreciate you joining.
Take care.
All right, great stuff from Dane, and we are about to get out of here. And so that means it's time to pick the music on the way out. So what are you thinking? Do you have any thoughts?
I had no thoughts, although, we did, it's one of those things where I didn't know if we should go like draft theme because we're like getting into that stuff, or because you and I do love the game of baseball, if we should have like an opening day theme as well. Jeff Hobson, our buddy over at Paul Brown Stadium, thinks you're like 45 years old. So I didn't know if like glory days, like you were nostalgic for when you were young and could throw a baseball really far. So that's kind of where my headspace was. But I think I could roll with you in any sort of direction, I think, this week.
All right. How about the boys are back in town? That's like it's a classic. It's about baseball, yeah. Really. At the end, I mean, it's one that we always used to love playing over at the Reds, and it's really all I got right now.
So, yeah, and you are back in town,
and I am back in town, and that's good. And very soon, when the draft comes, you'll be back in town, and there will be players that will be new boys on the team that are going to be in town. No, that's a stretch. That's a stretch. It's close enough. All right. So anyway, Thib Lizzy, boys are back in town. Come back next week. We'll talk about defense and the BBP. And we'll hear the John Brown story.
Guess who just got back today? Them wild-eyed boys that had been away. Haven't changed, had much to say. But man, I still think them cats are great. They were asking if you were around. I how you was, where you could be found. Told them you were living downtown, driving all the old men crazy. Shaking what she'd got. Man, when I tell you she was cool, she was red hot. I mean she was steaming. And that time over at Johnny's place, well, this chick got up and she slapped Johnny's face. Man, we just fell about the place. If that chick don't wanna know, forget her. The boys are back in town. I said,